Hey, this is Will Wheaton. I know, right? You're listening to the Rule Zero Podcast.
From the Rule Zero Studios in High Bar Zoom, this is Rule Zero, the podcast for gamers to talk about gaming. All games, all gaming, all the time. Welcome to the conversation.
Welcome back to Rule Zero. I am Chris, and I have cold steel running through my veins.
And I am Peach, and I am the Warrior.
And this episode, we have a very special guest.
A very, very special guest.
We have with us today Andy Klosky, who is the author of Cold Steel Warden. Say hello, Andy.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Awesome.
And we wanted to talk to you because I ran into you at Origins in the past, in the recent convention.
Yes.
And I got into a demo of a brand new game that isn't even out yet.
Yes.
Hopefully
very, very soon. Cold Steel Wardens will be out in PDF and then on shelves shortly thereafter.
So this is your own project, right?
Yes, this is my first solo game ever. So...
Oh,
a little bit of nerves.
Fantastic. Excellent. No problem. No problem.
Well, I had fun, but we'll get into that.
Good.
Why don't you tell us about yourself? Who is Andy Klosky?
And we need to know your gaming chops also.
Oh, of course. Naturally. I actually just turned 30.
Oh, congratulations.
Well, happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Just after Origins, actually. Ugh, I feel old.
Ouch.
Right? Way ahead of you, buddy.
way ahead of both of you. Thanks.
I live now in Englewood, Ohio, just north of Dayton. But I'm originally a Pittsburgher. I grew up just outside of Pittsburgh. I've been a gamer as long as I can remember. I started with actually Heroes Unlimited, the old Palladium system was.
Oh, I love the character generation in that. Actually, I just recently bought another copy from eBay because I just wanted to roll up a character on all of the random tables.
That's what I always liked about Villains and Vigilantes too.
Oh yeah, there's just so much, so many tables. I just wish they had an index for it.
Here,
yeah,
that. Oh.
The structure of that book is a little primitive. Yeah,
yeah, a little clunky.
Like the whole section about damage is mixed in with creating your stats.
Yeah. But I started with that, and of course got on the big train with D&D. I really started gaming at university. Actually, I started the Wittenberg University Role Playing Guild, which I was with at Origins. I do my gaming with them, along with some friends. That way, we can get in on the free rooms and the like through Gamma.
Yeah.
Fun.
But from there, I've kind of branched out. I've done some freelance work for GameWick Games, who have the Wickedly Errant gaming system. And I worked a little bit on the Interface Zero 2.0 project. I wrote up a big section on India for Dave Jarvis and them, and as well as Cubicle 7. I was recently nominated for one of the Origins Awards. We didn't win, but for the Mythos dossiers.
I saw you were up for it.
Yes, I was really excited about that one. That was a phenomenal book. It was a blast to work on.
Nice.
Excellent.
Yeah, bonus.
So you got some cred, really.
A little bit, starting to build. But
excellent.
When I first started writing Cold Steel Wardens, I got a hold of Angus Abranson at Chronicle City, and we have a print publisher partnership agreement set up so that once I get the PDF, it goes up on the Chronicle City site and then into print.
Rock on, man. Rock on.
Excellent. So so you said you started with Heroes Unlimited. Who got you into that?
My cousin Jason, actually, way back in, I think I was in sixth grade, started me on that trip. From there, I didn't actually get to play much because I was the only one who had the rule book. So, but luckily, one of my friends managed to pick up a set of the black cover second edition D&D books. So he started GMing for us, and an addiction was born.
There you go.
Excellent.
Nice.
Excellent.
Good on you, boy. All right. Well, tell us a bit about Cold Steel Wardens. We've both gotten to watch the Kickstarter, but how about you give the folks at home the elevator pitch?
Sure. Cold Steel Wardens is meant to emulate the Iron Age of comics, which we're talking, you know, 80s, early 90s, where, you know, writers like Alan Moore, Frank Miller, Grant Morrison started taking comics in a more kind of realistic psychological dimension. These are the stories that, you know, have a lot of depth and resonance. Watchmen, Dark Knight Returns, Daredevil Born Again, Sandman. Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I wanted to write a game that focused on these because they're the biggest, they're the popular storylines, they're things that people like and people continue to return to because they have so much depth, because they have so much resonance. And to me, there really wasn't a superhero game that does that. One that kind of rewards flawed street level heroes that really have to struggle to make a difference.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Far out, man. No, that's great because that you also are talking about both, you know, a time period that both Chris and I are very heavily into, because Chris even said the first time that he realized that comics work for kids was the Daredevil storyline that Frank Miller wrote, right?
Oh yeah,
yeah, the death of Elektra,
yep.
that whole storyline there.
Oh yeah,
yeah, we mentioned that on probably a couple podcasts.
I think we led with that on Undies on the Outside.
Okay, yeah,
but. No, that's,
I mean,
cool.
But so, yeah, that's one of my favorite eras of comics.
Yeah. I mean, they're spectacular stories, and I mean, you only have to go so far as to look at, you know, Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy. I mean, mm-hmm. that's pulling directly from No Man's Land. That's pulling from The Long Halloween. These are all Iron Age storylines that people tend to maybe kind of look at, and they see, oh, Rob Liefeld, guys with pouches, and they.
Yeah.
You know, shunt aside that idea that, yeah, a lot of the greatest storylines in comics come out of this age where writers started saying, hey, this is a respectable medium. This is something that I can really bring my artistic ability to.
Oh, yeah, and that was also during the time of the first rise of the independent title, you know, the independent publisher and things
Absolutely.
Like that. And that was wonderful. There were some wonderful things out there that you just weren't seeing elsewhere. You saw a lot of Howard Chaykin's grittier stuff, you know, when first comics. Stuff like that, like Times Squared and American Flag and things like that, just fantastic.
Garth Ennis is a huge influence on my writing. I mean, his run on, you know, Preacher, and I have his two Ghost Rider short runs.
When he was doing Sons of Midnight?
Say again?
When he was doing Sons of Midnight, or whatever it was that they had there. For a while there in the early 90s, Marvel tried to kick into the whole Vertigo thing by putting out a more adult line, and I think they had a run that was The Sons of Midnight, and it had Damon Hellstrom, and it had Ghost Rider and things like
Rise
that.
Rise of the Midnight Suns. I know what you're
Rise
talking
of the Midnight Suns. Thank you.
I have that in paperback.
Yeah. No, because that's also where Warren Ellis got his start as well, and things like that, and a couple one-shots in Vertigo.
I mean, phenomenal writers. And
oh, yeah.
I think a very underrepresented type of theme in terms of gaming, because there are a ton of superhero games out there. I mean, it's wish fulfillment fantasy in its highest form, but, you know, there's a lot of superheroes games that are kind of that general, like, oh, it's comics type
mm-hmm.
game. And
mm-hmm.
there's a fair amount of games that do kind of the Silver Age wackiness, you know, giant apes with lasers sort of a game. Icons is a great one, and I love Icons.
Oh, yeah.
Great game, but you can't run a dark, gritty, you know, game with that system. There's nothing mechanically that really supports it.
What other, did you look at other games besides, like, Icons? Were you looking at, like, I don't know, With Great Power or any of those types of things?
I have, just looking over at I'm sitting in my game room right now, so I'm just looking over at my shelf.
We all are.
And, you know, I have... Wild Talents, I can see from here, Marvel Comic, and, you know, Mutants and Masterminds, of course. I can't quite see from here. I have literally a stack of superheroes games, but, you know, and I found that was kind of the theme, the continual themes, that you had games that tried to do everything or games that tried to do something different. So
I felt
I can fill this void.
No.
So had you tried to run that kind of a story in another system and felt something lacking?
You mentioned that you'd run a campaign, and I'm curious what system you're running that campaign in.
Yes, actually. Before Cold Steel Wardens was a game, before I had actually put pen to paper or anything, I wanted to run an alternate universe Watchmen game, where basically basically the events of the graphic novel did not take place. You know, there is no giant space squid, you know, the comedian isn't killed. All the characters kind of fade into the background, so we focus on our heroes. And I was debating, you know, what do I do to run this game? What system do I use? And I was debating, okay, well, I could do Mutants and Masterminds or Champions or X, Y, and Z. Well, I ended up back with Heroes Unlimited for God knows what reason. But
I mashed it's fun to generate characters.
Exactly. It took us probably 5 hours.
I'm sure.
But I mashed on the Call of Cthulhu sanity system with a few other house rules here and there, and the game was fun primarily because I was gaming with a phenomenal group of people. I was with Lionel, who runs the role-playing guild at Wittenberg, as well as Kat Ostrander, who's now at Fantasy Flight Games.
Mm-hmm.
She's working on the Edge of the Empire line.
Oh, nice.
And Will Herman, actually, who just kickstarted, just before me, actually, kickstarted the Savage Worlds wildcard creator. So,
oh, right.
So I'm gaming with these guys and my wife, who's, you know, a phenomenal gamer. I got lucky. I married one of the gamer nerds.
Hey, so did Chris.
I did too, yeah.
I'm divorced, so.
But, you know, we had a blast, but the mechanics, the game itself, were a train wreck because it was cobbled together from little bits and pieces of all these systems. And at the as they were investigating all these things that were going on in the world, our heroes ended up dying in a car accident.
But you see, to me, that's fantastic.
The ultimate.
That's great.
That's what happens when you fail a drive check.
Actually, yes. Lionel's character was playing Lockshanks. Who's actually kind of revisited as a pre-gen character in Cold Steel Wardens.
Oh,
no. He was kind of a thief cat burglar type character, but he could manipulate light.
Oh.
So he was working as a DJ, and of course, DJ in the 80s, who had these parahuman abilities. He gets invited to all these coke parties.
Nice.
So he's up at this rave till 4 a.m., but of course, because he has the highest drive skill, they decide to let him drive across the state to get to this place that they're trying to investigate. That did not end well for them.
TPK'd them
again,
by a blind curve.
That's where I learned a valuable lesson. Handing the PCs more dice does not make anything better.
Right. I actually I had a similar situation where I set up a Star Wars game, and my plan was to have the party fly in. And then I realized when the pilot failed the roll that if the failure went catastrophically at the very first roll of the game, the ship would crash and everyone would die.
There you go.
So I decided to let it slide and went, you know, maybe I shouldn't make a single roll so instrumental in the course of the game.
I can chalk it up to nothing more than letting the situation get out of hand.
Well, that's awesome.
The sad thing is that is not the only time that I've lost an entire party of gamers or a party of PCs in a car accident.
Which I think is fantastic still. I mean, it's one of those things where this is something that happens. If that's what you're looking for in storytelling, you know, giving it a more realistic, a grittier feel to it, yeah, everybody could die in a car crash.
The second time we're playing Dark Heresy, so that kind of fit the world.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That happens in Dark Heresy.
Honestly, I got to tell you one other thing, just from a storytelling point of view or from a GM point of view. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's not that, if it's more important to you to have them land on the planet, have them land on the planet.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, if it's more important to you to get them across the state to get to this place, have them get across the state to get to this place.
Right. So, was there any actual challenge to what they were doing, or it was just a bad roll?
It was a bad roll compounded by another bad roll compounded by another bad roll. You see the pattern.
That's the best.
I love it when that happens.
One thing you've got to know about Lionel is that if this man has a 1 in 1,000 chance to do something wrong, that will happen every time.
Oh, okay.
For him.
I love him. He was one of the groomsmen at my wedding, but
nice.
Oh, man.
That's fantastic.
He's an entropy sink.
Yes, exactly.
I gamed with a guy named Larry who did the exact same thing. Could not roll to save his life.
Yeah, we have a guy in our regular group who unshuffles cards accidentally. He'll shuffle them, and they'll come out in sorted.
Wow. Phenomenal.
That really is amazing.
Yeah. So tell us more about Cold Steel Wardens. Tell me about the name. Where did that come from?
I wanted something that kind of reflected the kind of era. Obviously, it's a little cheesy, it's a little over-the-top title, but that's kind of, a little bit of what was going there. There's a bit of sensationalism. I also liked to play on the term warden, because warden has this kind of dual edge to it where, you tend to think, oh, well, very natural, very life-giving, this is someone who's preserving things, but when's really the one time that you really hear about wardens? Well, prison wardens.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
So I liked the kind of dualistic nature of that, and
nice.
I was really pleased with, actually, our cover we revealed at Origins, which was done by Talon Dunning, really, mm-hmm. I think, captured that sort of idea of, that duality with its... a white and black split, and it's up on the Blackfall Press Facebook page right now.
Oh, okay.
So if your listeners are interested, it's there.
Yeah, we'll have that up on the website too.
Awesome.
Yeah. Do you have another website for it, or is it hosted? Is all of your PR hosted on your Facebook?
Right now, we're running right through just through Facebook. I have a website that I'm slowly but surely getting ready for full release. It'll probably go live when the book goes out.
Okay.
Oh, cool. Give us a
when it does. I have seen this cover, and I got to say, it's beautiful. Can I post that on our page?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Tell us what makes this superhero game different from the other ones.
How did you solve your problems?
Yeah, good question.
It was something that had actually bothered me for quite a while, and I can sort of almost I can actually thank him a lot, Ken Height, for a little bit of inspiration. I had sat in on one of his seminars up at C2E2 in Chicago, and I posed the question to him, how do I get people to buy in on this? So in addition to a pretty lethal damage mechanic, which I can talk about in just a little, part of it is the idea of vigilance. A lot of games have the sort of, additional dice or reroll mechanic. Savage Worlds obviously has bennies, but I wanted to have a mechanic built in that, one, addressed the flaws, the injuries, the memories, what I call memories, motivations, and stances, the things that make a hero what they are. So on the backside of the character sheet, you have your memories, why you became a hero. Uncle Ben gets shot. Tony Stark gets ambushed in Afghanistan or Vietnam, depending on what you read. You have your motivations. Why do you want to be a hero right now? What's driving you right now? Punisher wants to avenge his family's death against, mob bosses. And then the big ones, stances, which are your sort of in first person philosophical, this is what I believe about crime fighting. This is what I believe about justice. I'm never going to use a gun to shoot someone. What does this hero feel about beating up the 16-year-old kid who's holding up a liquor store, but he's only doing it because he needs to feed his 12-year-old sister who's, his parents have walked out on? I wanted to be able to explore those. So basically, the GM has license to, anytime they take advantage of their hero's flaws, any of those, background elements, they have to throw dice into the pool.
Okay.
Well, the heroes use dice, and they can reroll, they can, add dice, or they can straight up take dice for negotiated narrative control. So the example that I've taken to using at a lot of the demos is, say you're Batman. Everyone wants to be Batman, right?
Yes, I do.
Long story.
You're in an office building. You're running. There's a whole bunch of goons there, armed with assault rifles. You have to get away. You say, "Hey, wouldn't it be great if there were a fire extinguisher on the wall next to those goons? I can throw my batarang at, and it'll blow up, and I can get away in the cloud of smoke." So the GM says, "Okay, that'll cost 3 dice." You pay 3 dice, and now there's a fire extinguisher, or now the goons accidentally fired on each other, or something else has happened. It gives the player some narrative control as the GM takes advantage of their flaws, their background elements. Now, the question that I posed to Ken, going back there, is how do I get how do I make it different? How do I get players involved? And he said, well, put the onus back on them. So I thought to myself is, okay, if I'm the player and I put myself in a situation where I'm breaking my moral code or I'm tempted by someone or I put Gwen Stacy up on the bridge with Green Goblin, GM has to pay me double now.
Oh, nice.
So it gives the player additional incentive to go out and seek conflict that makes for good storytelling.
Now, during part of the mechanic, I'm just trying to get this straight in my head. If I'm using my stance or if I'm going against my stance, if I'm using my stance, I give or I get so many dice. If I go against my stance, you pay me double?
Well,
is that what the deal is, or?
If I'm the GM and you're playing a hero who absolutely never uses guns.
Okay, let's say I'm playing Daredevil.
Awesome, sure. You're blind, obviously. All right.
Right.
So if I do something that totally fouls up your radar and now you're fumbling around in the warehouse in the dark, I have to throw you dice.
Okay.
But if you say, as the player, you say, uh-oh, there's, you know, big tank outside and now the warehouse is full of smoke, now I have to throw you double because you caused that problem yourself.
Mm. Okay, I get it.
Now, the one trick to that is the vigilance dice are a communal pot.
Oh, nice.
So you putting yourself in peril or the GM putting you in peril not only benefits you, it benefits the whole group because anyone can use that. Now, the flip side of that is because it's a communal pot, everything has to be done communally, which means that everyone has to achieve consensus at the table. So if even one person disagrees, dice go back in the pot, doesn't happen.
Dang.
Now, the neat thing about that is, and this is wonderful when it comes up at the table, is because heroes have conflicting stances. I mean, when you have Captain America and the Punisher on the same team, they're going to butt heads. And it's in that interpersonal drama that you get good storytelling. So,
true.
So when the Punisher goes to gun down, you know, Tony Castellano or whoever mob boss, and Captain America says, "No, you're not doing that." Well, now we have struggle. Now we have strife.
Cool.
And even though that's inner party at the table, that's not necessarily bad because that encourages how do these two heroes fundamentally approach justice, but do it while not being at each other's throats.
Mm-hmm. Now,
because they essentially want the same thing, but they have radically different ways of getting it.
Precisely, you got it.
Also, is there a mechanic that allows them to settle this you know conflict of interests? Is there something where they can something to each other or roll dice or do something?
Not specifically mechanically, but this is the sort of thing where that encourages them at the table to take up and to be in character and to speak as if you are, you know, the Punisher. I really want this guy, you know.
Mm-hmm. Captain America being, but the justice system is in place for a reason, and we have to believe it works, or else we can't call ourselves heroes, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
It's
designed, I hate to say, almost as a starter, as a way to instigate the role play at the table. So.
Gotcha. Okay.
Now,
what kind of a world does all this take place in?
Do you have one preset, or?
The default setting is a city called New Corinth, which is based partially on Gotham and Hub City from the old Question comics, and as well as, you know, I'm a Rust Belt kid, so it's based on Pittsburgh, it's based on Dayton, it's based on Cleveland, all the sort of kind of ruined industrial areas. And there's a pretty sizable chapter, I believe it's going to top out around 40 or 50 pages that's just the lore of the game. You know, what this city looks like and who are the major players, what's going on. And I've actually, in writing that chapter, I looked at it through the five knowledge skills of the game. When designing the mechanics, I wanted there to be parallelism. That way it's very easy to understand. So five categories, five skills each. Knowledge is one of them. So within the five primary knowledge skills, we look at the city through each different lens. So we look at the criminal element, and then we look at what's called the esoteric element, which is all the weirdness and the cults and the metahumans and things like that. And then we look at the scientific, where it's these are the major corporations, and this is the industry that's going on, or in New Corinth. New Corinth is kind of run down industrially, so that's a that's a big issue. There are a few competing corporations that are kind of fighting over the corpse of this city.
One of the nice things about that, though, is that makes for a great test market. So that would interest other corporations to come in, because they're going to throw anything they want to test into an area like that, because they know people will jump at something new. So
exactly, yeah. It's come out really, really unique, and one of the Kickstarter rewards that I've offered was the ability that if you pledged at X level, I don't remember how much it was, that you could design. I'm already starting a follow-up volume that'll be...
Oh, cool.
It's essentially... I'm actually taking a page from the Mythos dossiers in this. If imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, I'm outright stealing.
There you go. You're a flatterer.
I sure am. The idea is going to be essentially that it'll be... It's essentially, I don't want to say the monster manual, but a series of, you know, bad guys, right? Everyone likes bad guys.
Oh, yeah.
So, but instead of just being, oh, here are stats and here's this dry write-up, I want to do it all as in-character document. So that it's, here's a psychological evaluation of this guy, or here's court testimony about them, or here are pieces of evidence that were found at the crime scene dealing with, you know, this person. So it'll have a little bit of, you know, this is who they are, this is their shtick, this is what they do, and this is why they're creepy, but it'll also have that piece of evidence that you can say, okay, well, you made your investigation roll here, and you can print off, and it's ready to go.
Nice.
Oh, excellent. Okay.
Very cool.
The Mythos dossiers with Cubicle 7 did that phenomenally. And like I said, imitation, sincerest form of flattery.
There you go. And hey, if it works,
yeah,
more power to it, you know?
And you had a hand in that anyway, so you're kind of stealing from yourself, right?
Yeah. when I was writing for them, I did the sections on... I was lead on the sections for Chthonians and flying polyps, and then I did a smattering of other pieces throughout the book.
Very good.
So I was very happy with my treatment of flying polyps.
Why wouldn't you be?
How can you turn down a game with flying polyps?
Exactly.
My thing was, you have this very generic Cthulian blob creature, and I figured, well, how do you make this interesting? Well, what if it's sentient cancer?
Nifty. That's cool.
And then what if you make it sentient cancer that was created by a rogue geneticist working for the mob?
Oh, nifty.
As a weapon of intimidation. So you inject your mob rival with this stuff. He gets stage 4 terminal cancer. And at his funeral, his corpse explodes.
Nice.
Wow. That is,
I like
that
this.
Really gross.
That makes me happy on so many levels, I can't even go there.
Welcome to my imagination, gentlemen.
And I'm happy to be here.
That's great. Okay, so you said this is a kind of a street-level Batman, Daredevil kind of level thing. Is there a Silver Surfer in the world, for instance?
I actually addressed that in the book.
So there's like a Dr. Manhattan type guy walking around?
Well,
no. Fall in the esoteric
Long
realm?
Story short. The idea is that Any sort of character that has that level of power automatically, that's going to be a GM controlled character. That's going to be an NPC.
But they're out there, is really what I'm getting at.
Now, yeah, the potential for them being out there is there, and there are several metahumans that are in the lore. One of my favorite, and this is from that Heroes Unlimited game that spawned Cold Steel Works, was Mr. Kisses, and he's not a pleasant person. You don't want to be around Mr. Kisses.
No doubt.
But generally speaking, in terms of the players, the power level is sort of limited. You can make your Hank Pym, you know, size changer. You can make your elemental controller. You can even make your Doctor Strange. There's a power called sorcery. That's basically, you have all the powers, but it costs you physical or mental strain every time you do it.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
So the ability to create a very, very high-powered character is there, but going along with those powers, there's drawback. Unfortunately, I don't think you played in the 7 o'clock game I was running at Origins, the one based on I ran a game based on Grant Morrison's Arkham Asylum, a serious
house. Oh, nice.
Oh, okay.
My favorite all-time graphic novel.
One of my favorite Batman stories.
Yes. So I included a character. I wanted a sort of Bane-type Killer Croc character, but I didn't want to go with the whole monstrous route. Mm-hmm. So I made a little girl named Sophia, who essentially would Hulk out, and she was under treatment at the asylum for various reasons, but she has a power called Surge, which basically, you know, grants her really enhanced physical abilities.
Uh-huh.
So there's this 8-year-old girl who's literally flinging superheroes across the courtyard.
Nice.
It's Katie Kaboom.
Gotta love it.
Nice.
Excellent.
Very nice.
Okay. So how far along are you? I mean, how long before we see this in a store on Amazon or on a bookshelf?
I'm hoping before Gen Con. My original target date was PDF in time for Origins, but unfortunately some scheduling conflicts with my layout guru kind of shot that in the foot. I am currently in final copy editing and layout right now.
Oh, nice.
Basically, I have about a third of the book done. I've seen through, I think, chapter 6 of final proofs. So ideally, it'll be on sale in PDF at Gen Con and then print shortly thereafter.
Nice. Will you be at Gen Con?
I will be, yes. I'm running... Cold Steel Wardens on Saturday and Sunday. I believe I'm actually sold out, which is exciting. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it for the other 2 days, but I will be there both on the weekend.
Great. I hope to run into you. I finally get to go to a convention this year, so awesome. Gen Con is my big one. But Rule Zero is going to be at Gen Con.
Yes, both of us.
I think I'm in the JW Marriott, so,
okay.
So if you get a chance, by all means, swing by.
We will,
okay.
We will. Definitely.
I have another question.
Sure.
Has anybody run Cold Steel Wardens for you?
Yes, actually. I've had my wife run it, which was
nice.
Phenomenal because it was the first time I actually got to sit down and play in my own game.
Yay.
Awesome.
Which blew my mind. We wrote a scenario based on Birds of Prey.
Oh, nice.
And we went ahead and statted up Black Canary and Huntress, and then I threw in Terra as well as Vixen to make things a little different. I brought in some of the stuff after Identity Crisis into their stances and motivations so that there was a little Birds of Prey versus Justice League animosity going on.
Cool.
And then I've also had a couple other people running it, some of the other folks at the Wittenberg Role-Playing Guild, as well as I had one of my Kickstarter backers was really excited and ran it at the Chicago Game Day.
Nice.
Which was
okay.
Phenomenal. And you know, good to
so
see
this,
getting out there.
That was a person who had not played it with you.
Nope.
Running
just
it for
someone
you.
Who liked the idea and backed me on the Kickstarter and really, when I released the beta rules, by the way, the beta rules are totally free online right now
on
our Kickstarter page. Yeah. So
okay.
If you want to go and you have no interest in buying the game and you just want to see what it's about, there are a whole bunch of Word documents. Ready, go.
You know,
don't
that
be
was
silly. We
question.
Are interested in buying the game, so don't worry about
oh.
that. That's a given.
Yeah, collective you, you know.
Well, my next question was actually, how can people find out more about it?
Yeah, well,
there you go.
Yeah, you can. It's a fully playable beta release of the game. Now, mind you, a lot of the, you know, that's before we've done a lot of our editing. That's before we've done, you know, a lot of refinements to the system. One of the big ones was the action economy.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started writing the mechanics, I had this, you know, sort of move minor standard mentality from D&D, and I was trying to fit that in, and then I eventually got to the point where I just said, you know what, screw it. Do two things. Are they things? Can you do them? Do two of them.
There you go.
So that became kind of our mantra in regards to the action economy.
Nice.
So,
Rock and roll.
But But yeah, the Kickstarter, I still post updates on the Kickstarter about once a month, just kind of general update, what's going on, where are we at. But right now, the easiest place to get news is our the Blackfall Press LLC Facebook page.
Okay. And we will have that up on the Rule Zero podcast site.
Awesome.
And is there anything else you want us, is there any other way that people who are interested in the stuff that you're working on, do you have a blog or something like that they can keep up with what you're doing?
I do. My blog is a little bit on hiatus. I'm looking at getting back to it at the end of the summer.
Okay.
It's platinumwarlock.blogspot.com.
Okay.
And I've been blogging there. I'm almost my 400th entry, which is exciting.
Oh, wow.
I'm actually looking to do a giveaway for Cold Steel Wardens when I hit 400.
Oh, nice.
So okay. if someone out there wants a free copy, keep your eyes peeled over there.
Definitely.
Okay. Are you on Twitter?
I am not yet. I will be very, very soon, actually.
Okay.
And it will likely be cool. Blackfall Press.
And is there an email that people can get a hold of you at if they wish to?
apklosky@gmail.com.
Okay. Cool.
And your home phone number? I'm kidding.
And what about social security number? I'm asking this strictly for informational purposes.
Yeah, we're just going to send it along to that one prince in Nigeria, right?
Exactly. He's the one who funds all of Rule Zero. Are you kidding me?
Of course. He's so generous.
He really is.
Was there a question that we didn't ask you that you wanted to say and wanted to answer?
I can't really think of anything offhand. I'm just really excited to get this out there and move on to the next big project, which should be exciting.
Excellent.
I just wanted to throw in a quick something before anything else, and that is Chris came up to me a little over a year ago and had pitched an idea like The Watchmen,
mm-hmm.
Where there's a big Omega-powered guy, and he's kind of like the star brand. He can pass on his power. And so the clincher on it is everybody else's street-level superheroes, and who's going to be the one to take on the mantle, knowing that it's going to burn you out and kill you. And I think we finally found the system to run that game in.
That would be it would fit perfectly, right? Mm-hmm. Like hand in the glove.
Yeah, I mean, I was the more I hear about it, the more excited I am to actually run it in this.
Oh, here.
Awesome, that's what I'd like to hear, brother.
Yes, indeedy.
Well, thanks a lot for talking to us, Andy.
Hey, guys, my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy.
As usual, you can get a hold of me at chris@rulezeropodcast.com, or you can get a hold of Pete by emailing pete@rulezeropodcast.com, or you can email the show at rulezeropodcast@gmail.com, and you can follow us on Twitter as @RuleZeroPodcast. Go on over to Facebook and throw us a like. So we're gonna close it up here, and that's all I had.
That's all that I had as well.
So from me.
And me.
Go ahead, Andy.
And me, I guess, too.
Game on.
Game on.
Game on.
Rule Zero Podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. You can use our podcast in your music video or send us to your friends and family, but be sure to mention our names on our website at www.rulezeropodcast.com. Segment and closing music is by Maggie Sansone, used by permission, and is available at maggiesmusic.com.